Picture this. It's 1961, and you're holding a classified document in a White House office. The paper reveals that a U.S. nuclear first strike would kill 275 million people immediately, with deaths rising to 625 million when including fallout across Europe and neutral countries. That's one Holocaust in a single strike. This wasn't fiction or a hypothetical scenario. This was the actual U.S. war plan that Daniel Ellsberg, later famous for leaking the Pentagon Papers, was staring at. The Doomsday Machine draws on Ellsberg's unique insider experience as a nuclear war planner and his 5 decades of activism, offering a chilling glimpse into how close humanity has repeatedly come to annihilation. When Ellsberg joined Rand Corporation in 1958 as a strategic analyst, he entered a world of apocalyptic calculations. He and his colleagues engaged in what seemed the most important work imaginable, preventing nuclear war by ensuring Soviet leaders would face unacceptable consequences for attacking America. The logic was brutally simple. Adequate deterrence required a survivable capability to kill more Soviet citizens than the 20 million who died in World War II. While most Rand colleagues studied weapons vulnerability, Ellsberg specialized in the understudied but critical area of nuclear command and control. What particularly concerned him was the problem of ambiguity in strategic warning. In 1960, the new ballistic missile early warning system in Greenland generated a false alarm when radar signals bounced off the rising moon, causing executives to be evacuated in panic, believing nuclear war had begun. Throughout Pacific Command, Ellsberg discovered nuclear safeguards being systematically bypassed. Though procedures require 2 officers with split codes from separate safes to authenticate nuclear orders, duty officers had created workarounds at every command post. More alarming was the intentional absence of authentication procedures to recall aircraft once launched. No stop or return codes existed, not by oversight, but by design. Military commanders feared civilian leaders might reconsider after ordering a strike, leaving forces disorganized and vulnerable. The system deliberately made presidential recall of nuclear bombers impossible once airborne. Ellsberg also uncovered that Eisenhower had secretly delegated nuclear launch authority to theater commanders, creating multiple points of potential unauthorized nuclear initiation if Washington communications were disrupted. The military's determination to maintain operational freedom extended to violating international agreements, including secretly storing nuclear weapons in Japanese waters against treaty obligations. Top-secret documents at CNCPAC headquarters revealed a disturbing fact. Every war plan against the Soviet Union included striking all major Chinese cities. When questioned, military leaders insisted it would be insane to fight one communist power while letting the other one off scot-free. By 1960, nuclear war planning was consolidated into the Single Integrated Operational Plan, SIOP. This plan coordinated all U.S. warheads in one massive attack, targeting every city in the Soviet Union and China with populations over 25,000. The arsenal included about 1,700 SAC bombers carrying thermonuclear bombs up to 25 megatons, each exceeding all explosives ever detonated in history. The PSYOP briefing revealed the plan's horrifying scale, 40 megatons on Moscow alone, 4,000 times more than Hiroshima. Most shocking were the casualty projections. Fallout would kill 100 million Soviets and 300 million Chinese, half of each country's population. When someone questioned targeting China if they weren't involved, General Power dismissively replied that changing the plan would really screw it up. In spring 1961, Ellsberg drafted the General War section for the Department of Defense's new Basic National Security Policy. His proposal challenged existing nuclear war plans, advocating for strategic reserves, reliable command systems, physical safeguards against unauthorized actions, and alternatives to targeting cities. Ellsberg promoted a coercive, no-cities strategy designed to end war quickly before urban areas became targets. This approach became the foundation for Kennedy's operational war plans, which Ellsberg reviewed for Deputy Secretary Gilpatrick in 1962, 1963, and again under Johnson in 1964. On October 22, 1962, Kennedy announced the Soviet installation of offensive missiles in Cuba, declaring that even a single missile launch would trigger a full retaliatory response upon the Soviet Union, essentially promising general nuclear war over one missile. Unknown to Kennedy, 42,000 Soviet troops, not the estimated 17,000, were in Cuba with over 100 tactical nuclear weapons. More critically, the Presidium had authorized local commanders to use these weapons against an invasion force without Moscow's approval. On October 27, while negotiations continued, Soviet submarine B-59 endured hours of depth charge attacks. Captain Savitsky ordered the nuclear torpedo prepared. "We're going to blast them now. We will die, but we will sink them all." Unlike other submarines requiring only two officers' approval to launch, B-59 needed three. Vasily Arkhipov's refusal to consent likely saved the USS Randolph carrier group and prevented the full American nuclear response that would have followed. Where did the road to doomsday begin? When World War II started in 1939, President Roosevelt urged nations to avoid bombing civilians, with Britain and Germany initially agreeing. This agreement collapsed when Hitler bombed London in 1940. A year later, British leaders secretly adopted and expanded these tactics. By early 1945, particularly under General Curtis LeMay in Japan, targeting civilian populations became standard military strategy. The RAF discovered incendiary bombs were more effective than explosives for destroying cities and deliberately targeted dense workers' housing where fire spread quickly. By 1943, their strategy evolved to create firestorms, massive conflagrations, generating hurricane-force winds that intensified the flames. Truman never hesitated to use atomic bombs because the moral threshold of deliberately killing Japanese civilians had been crossed months earlier. The atomic bomb accomplished with one device what previously required 300 bombers. The Soviets created Perimeter, nicknamed Dead Hand, to counter U.S. decapitation threats, an automated system allowing underground officers to detect nuclear explosions in Moscow through sensors. If Moscow were destroyed and communications cut, ICBMs would launch automatically. This system reportedly still exists today. Ellsberg argues that doomsday risk could be eliminated without total disarmament. The greatest danger comes from preemptive attacks triggered by false alarms. He recommends dismantling the Minuteman III missile force and reducing Trident submarine capabilities targeting Russian land-based missiles, removing the rationale for both sides' launch-on-warning policies. Ellsberg concludes that omnicide, the near extinction of life on Earth, is illegitimate as national policy and must be recognized as criminal. These monstrous policies aren't created by monsters, but by ordinary politicians, analysts, and military strategists, exemplifying Hannah Parent's banality of evil. We stand at a crossroads where systems designed to protect us have become our greatest threat. The nuclear destruction machinery operates largely outside public view, with launch protocols vulnerable to false alarms, miscalculations, or individual actions. Our survival thus far has been not by design, but by extraordinary luck, luck that cannot hold unless we dismantle the doomsday machines we've built.